There he is. Hi, Peter. It's Debbie.
Hi, I'm Peter.
I have to say, Peter, I had so much fun watching Silent Zone. Number one, I love post-apocalyptic films. I love zombies, and I love to see what a filmmaker can do with that combination. And you have delivered a really entertaining film. The action is wonderful. I actually would have liked to have seen a little bit more in the first half of the film. You connect with the characters of Cassius and Abigail, and to a degree, Megan and David, but definitely you keep us in the POV of Abigail and Cassius, so we really connect with them. So by the time we get to the third act, we are so invested in them and what might or might not happen. So you build tension along the way. You have incredible zombie makeup and production design. Just so well done. How did this film come your way?
Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you for all the feedback. I'm happy that you like the film and you like the characters and it wasn't boring for you. It all started that this is my first feature film as a director. So I directed hundreds of commercials, a lot of music videos, and a lot of short films before. And I also co-produced in a couple of films. Some of them were Hungarian language, some of them were English. And I always wanted to step forward and start to directing my own projects. And we've developed a couple of scripts that producers and distributors liked, but they were very, very expensive. And we put them up to the shelf and tried to develop a new script which is much cost efficiently, which can be done much cost efficiently. And we postponed our other scripts. So that's how Silent Zone started. That we had the idea to do a really low budget zombie, post-apocalyptic zombie road movie. And of course, during the making of the script and during the pre-production of the film, my megalomaniac inner self kicked in, and I started to put in action scenes and other scenes with much more ferals and much more stunt work and more extras. But originally, it started the way that we wanted to develop and write a really low budget post-apocalyptic film with only a few actors, limited number of locations, limited number of actors, and that's what we have in the end.
Well, I'm very glad that your megalomaniac self took over because and made this even bigger. I could see how you could have gone, kept it small, just focusing on Cassius and Abigail with fewer zombies and be more about them trekking through the forest. But how long can you watch some people trek through the forest? So upping the ante as you did really works well and it looks fantastic on screen. This film, especially the makeup job on all of your ferals, is so well done. That alone,
Thank you.
the production values in that alone just up the ante exponentially. The makeup is just beautifully done for all of the ferals. That really stood out for me. As did then the action pieces. You vary up the action here. We've got a lot of man on man or man on feral battling with hand-to-hand choreography, knife work, saber work, different kinds of guns. Really some intricate stunt work here, Peter, and I love it.
Thank you. The key was that because we had a limited budget, of course, because in the beginning our aim was to just do prepared for the shooting. So this film, we were shot the entire film in 30 days. Like, if you remember the big action scene in the Red Sand Mine.
Yes.
In the beginning of the film. From the point then the ferals appear until the end of the action scene when they left with the Range Rover, mm-hmm. with the Discovery Jeep, I don't know which was that. So we only had one day to shoot that entire action scene.
Wow.
And it could only happen that we very well prepared the actors very well prepared for that, and I really like more that kind of actions that was made in the 80s and in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
like what Steven Spielberg did in the Indiana Jones movies,
mm-hmm.
when you have wider shots. A little longer shots, you can see the choreography, you can see what is happening, and not just what is recently trend that an action scene looks like very fast cuts of close-ups,
mm.
and you don't really understand what is happening. Of course, if you do that version, then you can really easily intercut between a stunt double and the real actor.
Mm-hmm.
But if in our case, we couldn't use stunt doubles for our two main actors. So they had 3 months of training before the shooting to build up some, for Matt Dury to build up some muscles and learn all these things, the choreography, gun handling, all this stuff, and for Lutz up as well. So basically, we used a lot of stunts, but not the stunt doubles,
mm-hmm.
because they had to do everything themselves.
Mm-hmm. I have seen Matt in many other acting roles before. He definitely did a lot of working out for this role. There is a lot of muscle that he put on for this performance, and something that I really love. Luca, who is a relatively new, she's a newcomer, really, for us.
She just turned 18 when we shot the film.
She has such a command of the screen. Number one, the camera loves her. But she has such a command of the screen and such a great physicality. And watching her, the way she can use guns and knives, great. Coordination, great strength, emotional and physical strength comes through. She's not wavering. She's not flinching. She really dedicated herself to this performance, Peter.
Yeah, I mean, I was very lucky with all the cast and the crew because everybody just put in much more than I could imagine. So it was everybody's passion project to make this film the best we can.
Absolutely amazing. Now, number one, I love the locations that you have. We get some sandy, deserty kind of area that's, you know, valleys between mountains. We get forest. A lot of the forest scenes, I love what your cinematographer has done. We get some really beautiful cinematic shots looking up at the canopy. The forest canopy with light coming through. And it's so beautiful and it's so calming. It's a moment of quiet, catch your breath before the next influx of ferals might be happening. And I really love that. But your locations, you utilize them so well in terms of choreographing and blocking the scenes. So I'm curious about your work with your cinematographer and what you were looking for, how you developed the visual language that the two of you came up with.
Well, I worked with Balázs, the DP of Silent Zone, since 2008. And we did short films, commercials together. We did a feature film where I was a to show, even in close-ups, to do wider lens, to show the actors in the environment, because the environment is important here.
Yeah.
And we wanted to utilize the environment as much as we can. Sadly, my DP Balazs, who was actually a Karlovy Vary winner, director of photography, he passed away recently. So he could not saw the finished film. He saw the edited version after the edit and before the color grading, but sadly he couldn't saw the final film.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. His work is just beautiful here, and I love that you went with the wide shots, because not only does it let us see the scope of the area and the battles when we're having battles, but it also, for a lot of the desolation, we see just how destroyed everything is. As your opening shots in the film, going through a mall, and trees and foliage are growing throughout the mall. The concrete's broken down. Later on, when our poor survivalists are trying to find a place to stay for the night, and they go to the abandoned town. And here again, this location, you really want to get the feel of the scope of how big the city may or town may have been, with the tall buildings, and to see it now totally empty and overgrown, with nature creeping in and taking hold. Just so beautiful to see. It's beauty amongst the horror that's unfolding. And a really wonderful job by both of you, Peter. Just wonderful. I'm curious, where did you shoot? Where were the locations for this? Because that the empty town, it's overgrown. I'm really curious where that was.
Well, all of the locations were in Hungary. Our studio, and we are based in Budapest, in Hungary, which is actually the biggest filmmaking hub in Europe.
Yes, it is.
London. And it was great because we found all of these locations within 100 miles radius of Budapest. So we didn't have to move so much. But we didn't have a location manager either, so I did the location scouting with the production manager of the film and even with the writers, because if we found a good location that we could not use in the script, we tried to figure out the way that what to change, or maybe even change the location of a scene to utilize a good location that we found during the location scouting. And so everything was quite close to our city. But these abandoned city buildings, they are actually former Soviet military bases.
Mm-hmm.
Because in 1990, from Hungary and from all of the socialist Central and Eastern European countries, the Russian military moved back to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And they left all their military bases there empty. And they were so big military bases that actually a small cities were built around the military bases for the Russian soldiers and their families.
Wow.
So there were residential buildings, schools, kindergartens, cinemas, everything. And some of them are demolished already, but some of them are still exist after 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how they look.
Wow.
So this is just very authentic, that if something would happen as a zombie apocalypse or an outbreak or something, like, it would look like just this.
Wow. just, I mean, that just blows my mind. Everything looks so authentic. So I figured that possibly some of these buildings, they were left over from the war. But yeah, having them be Soviet military bases makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. And they were...
The only cheat is that they are abandoned for 35 years and not for 10, but that's a minor issue.
Yeah, well, Mother Nature can wear things down and overgrow things quickly when she's left alone. So you're okay.
These are extremely beautiful locations. Like if you remember, then when Abigail is in the top of the tall building, then there are actually trees growing up from the roof of the building.
Yeah.
That are 5 stories high. And this is actually a thing. So nature really... really claims back everything.
Yeah.
In short time.
Yeah, because I noticed that on some of the buildings with the trees growing on the roofs. I'm so thrilled that that's authentic, and it wasn't something production design had to go up there and stick buckets of trees up there. Now, you have a great contrast here. When we get to the cabin in the woods. Now, anytime you see a cabin in the woods... you better be wary of what might be happening. That cabin, that whole scene in the inky blue black of night, which, by the way, your coloring on this film is pristine. But we get there to Norton's cabin, and it is so warm, so inviting. The golden tones, even the decoration, the set decoration within the cabin. It's really lovely, and it feels very warm and familial, and such a contrast to the rest of the film.
Well, it's a classic. It's a classic. You know, the Hansel and Gretel story.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
When you walk in, it's so calming, so warm. You start to feel yourself good, and just immediately, it's too late.
I have to say, I loved the shower scene where Abigail is taking a shower with hot water for the first time in who knows how many years. And the joy that Luca had on her face about taking a shower, it's just, I mean, that was just so precious to see that. And you really believed how happy she was, because I'm betting that she did have a lot of production dirt on her from because the bulk of this film is outside. There again, Luca was very believable at her joy at taking a hot shower. That was a charming moment in the film. Of course, then you have to twist and turn this thing for us, and without giving anything away, where there's a cabin in the woods, there's going to be a basement or an oven. You give us a basement. That is not too nice.
Yeah.
You have another visual contrast there that shifts tone. So you take us back and forth, shifting tone with your visuals throughout the film. And this really kicks off. This is, you know, our third act kickoff, where it's just run and gun. You just have us on a ride for the rest of the film, Peter. And nobody gets to stop and take a breath. And it's fantastic. How challenging was it for you tonally in working with your editor to find the pacing of this film and to build to that crescendo once we get to Norton's beautiful cabin, his not-so-beautiful basement, and then everything that happens after that? That could not have been easy to find the pace for this film.
Well, our problem was... when we first did the edit, that the first version was almost 3 hours long.
I would have watched it.
So the biggest work was to what to skip, what to leave out of the final film.
Mm-hmm.
And usually we compress the scenes, but there were some scenes we've cut out completely. And we thought that in the beginning we need time for the exposition, then in the second act we need time to this is morning, next to the baby during the night, mm-hmm. and, you know, put Megan's necklace into his box is the only scene when we slow down a little.
Yeah.
But beside that scene, it's all action and story goes on because we already attached to our characters.
Mm-hmm. And you create that boat city, that boat colony, and you really make use of space so beautifully. You've got very narrow corridors. Instead of having the big wide forest to work with, now you're more confined. And that also helps to really heighten the tension. Because now it's like no matter which direction you turn, you can't avoid a feral. They're everywhere. As everybody is frantically trying to save themselves and get out of there. Was that difficult from a logistic standpoint, shooting the boat colony and the action that was happening on there?
That was actually the most difficult part of the film because, you know, shooting in these rural locations like the mine, the forest, the Abaddon cities and everything, the problem is that there's nothing there.
Right.
So we had to bring everything. So we had a quite big base with all of the buses, the makeup trucks, the honey wagons and office trucks and everything. So we had to create a base with all the necessary things there, electricity and so on. But in the boat town, it was two times difficult because the base we had on the shore, and when we did the location scouting and the pre-production, then there was a small gate from the shore to the boat town that we thought that we will remove when it will be visible in front of the camera, but otherwise we will use that to travel into and out of the boat town. But when we did the shooting, the water level was much higher, and they couldn't put that thing there. So the only way we could travel to the boat town back and forth was by the small boat.
Oh no.
So it made like a lunch break was very long because it took a lifetime to move everybody, all the crew and cast and stunts and extras from the boat town to the base and then back. And the other one was, you know, the big action scene because we had to create an illusion that there are a lot of people on the boat town and there are a lot of ferals.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, for the big action scenes, I only had my actors around 8 stunts,
mm-hmm.
and 40 colony people,
mm-hmm.
for 40 villagers and 40 ferals. And we had to move them every time and do the background choreography to be able to look in the film that lots of people everywhere, you know, angle.
Peter, I love how you say you only had 40 ferals, 40 stunt, your primary cast, which at this point is going to be like 3, maybe 4 people. So you only had about 85 people. Only. That's a lot of people to be navigating around, Peter. Even 20 people would have been a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you think about logistics and catering and directing all these people, then yes, it's a lot.
Yeah.
If you think about if you just put 80 people on a field or something, you can see they're not looking a lot in the camera. So it's tricky. To use them away and without you know the audience recognizing that in every third shot that they already saw that feral or that villager,
mm-hmm.
in 3 shots before.
Just outstanding. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you pulled this off. And for this to be your first feature film. So this now begs the question. What did you learn as a filmmaker in directing and making Silent Zone? You know, that you can now take forward into future films. And I hope you've proven yourself you can make feature films and make them well with Silent Zone. So I really hope you do more feature directing in the future. But I'm curious, after this and with everything that you did for the authenticity, the reality of it, the action, what did you learn about yourself as a director that you can take forward into future projects?
Well, I believe that I've learned a lot. So it would be hard to just summarize it in short time because I've learned so much thing about it. But one of them is the thing that I have to, sometimes I have to let go when not 100% can be done out of what I wanted to do. Because we had days when I couldn't do everything I planned, or we had days when some stunts had injuries and they had to take to the hospital, and it took a couple of hours to where we had to stop shooting and everything, and because we didn't have the budget, we couldn't repeat the entire day, but we had to somehow, you know, manage all the things. And now I feel I'm much more comfortable about accommodating these situations and know how to handle these and reorganize things and maybe change things in the film and go with another version that's still going to be as good as I planned before. And of course, you know, I did some shorter projects,
mm-hmm.
but I had a lot of experience because I worked a crew this size in commercials and everything, but not for a project this long, and I underestimated the work. not the work I need to put in during the shooting, but I knew that how much work it would need, but I underestimated a little bit how much time it will consume of my time before the 6 months before the shooting and during the entire post-production. So and of course hundreds smaller experience that I think I can use as an advantage in my future projects.
As a director, you have won me over with Silent Zone. I will see anything that you want to make, Peter. I really love what you put into this film. I love how everything came out. It looks beautiful. There's the emotions. We go on a ride of emotions while things, we see relationships growing. It's just on every level, you have succeeded. And I want more from you, Peter. I want to see more.
Thank you. Well, we try. You know, even Silent Zone just came out 2 weeks ago, 1.5 weeks ago. But since we finished the film, we finished the film last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, it already opened up my possibilities. So now we're in the middle of development of bigger projects. One of them is in the same genre, but other one is a medieval psycho thriller. And so we moving forward in budget, quality, everything. And even if the film just released, I already saw in the last 6 months that how much it opened up our possibilities. So I'm
I can't wait. Peter, this has been so wonderful getting to speak with you today. And I hope we get to talk again in the future.
Thank you. It sounds nice. I try to make another movie as soon as I can. We can have another interview, yeah.
Please do.